there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 251. You can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send that email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. Follow us on Twitter. We've been tweeting, so you can follow us. The handle is, of course, This Show Is So Gay. And go to the Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay. Like us, because we sure as heck like you. A huge show for you this week. We're going to get started right this very second. You know, I said this actually about a month ago when we had NPR's Neda Ulaby back on the show. One of the amazing things about doing this show week after week, year after year, is that I get to talk to some of the same folks over and over again and get to know their projects and them personally in just these incredible ways. And I call them friends, and I demand that they call me the same. And that's the case with our first guest. Mariah Hansen is the founder and creator of the legendary Club Skirts Presents the Dinah, the largest lesbian event in the world, and the original version of the Modern Dinah Shore weekend festivities. It takes place this year on April 2nd through April 6th, and it is, by my count, her 24th Dinah. We'll check in about that. She's more than just an event producer. She is first and foremost an avant-garde business entrepreneur who, in the past couple decades, has created just the most incredible cultural and social phenomenon. She's built an empire. The performers at the Dinah read like a who's who of modern day entertainment, just a pantheon of giants. But there's also a social justice edge to her as well, lest you forget it. This is always one of my favorite chats of the year. Mariah Hansen, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Ken, did my mother send you money?
That's what you get in your fifth appearance on This Show Is So Gay. Wait, you got the sixth? I just get down on one knee and propose.
Oh, my God.
I know.
I'm like, that's me? Wow. I'm so honored to be considered one of your friends, and you are now officially one of my best friends.
Well, I adore you. I adore you. Now, I will tell you that I looked back over your past appearances on the show, and this is the latest in the year that we've ever talked. Let me put it another way. This is the closest to the Dinah that we've ever talked, and that makes me nervous. What kind of headspace?
No, I'm very calm.
Look at you.
Yeah. I have an incredible staff. I tell you this every year. I have such a good staff, and they get better and better, and they make my life so much more calm.
Love it. I love it.
I do too.
Well, let's go back. We got to go back to little Mariah Hansen. Tell me about the first party. What do you remember about the first party, the first event that you ever planned?
Oh, my gosh. It was at Sonoma State University. I was in the dorms. I lived in the dorms, and I was turning 21, and I had a boyfriend at the time. He was in a rock band, and he could only use his equipment if he had another band play with him, because actually they didn't have any equipment. They had the other band's equipment. And I talked the dorm manager into allowing me to host a 21st birthday party in the cafeteria of Sonoma State. And he gave it to me on two conditions, Ken. He said, don't charge any money and there's to be no booze.
Okay.
And I said, oh, totally, never. And, you know, of course, I charged $5 a head, and I had five kegs Lone Star.
I love it. And then Melissa Etheridge showed up.
Yeah, no, that didn't happen.
Oh, I like my story.
That was my early beginning, breaking the rules at Sonoma State. And in fact, I just got a very nice award recently from the city of Palm Springs, and they asked for my early history. And I read it, and I was kind of embarrassed because it's one story after another of, me holding up people on my neighborhood street when I was eight in a cowboy outfit, charging them a quarter to drive by so that they could get home. And then there's stories like this at the dorm, and then there's stories about tricking the Palm Springs Museum into letting me be a corporate benefactor, and I was like, oh my God, I was a little hustler when I was little.
I love it. Let me ask you this. Now, although this question is predicated on you accepting that you're an extraordinarily successful event planner, you accept that, right?
I always feel humbled and honored when I hear that accolade.
Okay, but I hear you saying, yes, I accept that. What do you
accept that, Ken.
Okay, good. What do you think sets you apart. Now, I know, look, I know you have an amazing staff. In fact, we had one of your staff on the show this year. We had Brianna Stockton on. We adore her. You have your amazing staff and clearly have a gift for picking amazing staff. But what do you think separates Mariah Hansen from the pack?
I really care about our customers' experience. It's personal to me.
Yeah.
And I get that people are entrusting their vacation with me, and that for a good deal of our customers, they're spending their vacation money with us. We're who they're choosing, not Hawaii or Paris, France, or, you know, they're on limited budgets and they're going to the Dyna. And I take that really seriously because I know how I feel when I go on vacation and how I felt my whole life. It's that time that you have to just relax and live your life out loud. And so that's a commitment to me, to make sure that when people are entrusting us with their valuable vacation time, that we're going to show them the time of their life.
Yeah. Now, I will tell you, and you can take this as you will, I would never invite you to an event that I'm planning. And I would imagine there are any number of people who feel the same way. Do you understand that?
Oh, God, Ken, a little bit, yeah. You know, when you're – that's so funny. That's why no one invites me anywhere.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, God. Listen, it's twofold. I'm going to tell you one thing, and then I'm going to tell you a secret.
Okay.
The first thing is that it's really difficult for anyone in any industry to be anywhere in their industry that they're not a part of and to have an eye. You
right.
can't help it. And so, yeah, when people do invite me to things, I do see – areas that, you know, it's like, ooh, could have done that, or, oh, my God, that was fabulous. But I also want you to know that I throw the worst birthday parties for my girlfriend ever. I can't do it. In trouble every year.
I don't even...
Those years when I didn't have a girlfriend, I still got in trouble.
My mouth is open, which doesn't make for good radio. Were I your girlfriend, and we can deconstruct that later off the air, I would not be happy with you. I would say, what are you talking about? Have you not been to the Dyna? Plan my freaking birthday party.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just such a disconnect.
Yeah, I'm going back to my earlier statement, and I did check with all the people that you know. I would never invite you to an event that I would throw.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
I would love to go to your event.
Yeah, yeah. And then I would ask you.
I wouldn't say anything.
Do you? Now, well, that's an interesting question.
Do you like me whining? I'm whining, Ken. I want to go.
If someone asks you, because I feel like this has happened, have you censored yourself when someone says, Mariah, what did you think of my event?
Never. Yes, of course I would. Yeah.
Mariah, I feel like you're censoring yourself. I want your honest feedback. What did you think of my event? Still, you would bite your tongue?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yep.
Okay. You can come to my event.
Yeah. I would bite my tongue. In very rare occasions when I really – yeah, because I know how hard it is, and
yeah.
I know that – you know, you can be really critical about the small things, but it's the big picture that really matters. And so I might notice things, but I always have a good time wherever I go.
Yeah.
And you kind of really appreciate what people put into to present, whether it's a dinner party or a nightclub party or an event. It's a lot of work. So I would actually concentrate on what I thought was really positive about it. And if I thought they really misstepped in a way that would hurt their business, I might say something as delicately as I could, but it depended on my relationship with them.
Totally. Totally. You know, I work a lot with my students who do so much event planning in their roles in college life and trying to dissuade them from the notion that the greatness of an event lives and dies by the number of people that attend. And as someone who plans an event where, you know, I'm sure you're looking at numbers, but there is a built-in audience and you have a sense it'll be well attended. What advice do you have for event planners who are just looking at, all right, how many people show up, and that's the only thing that determines if my event was successful?
Well, that's kind of narrowing down into two types of event producers, and one type of event producer cares only about how much money they're making. That's why they're counting heads.
Yeah.
That's what that results in. I had 100 people, I made X amount of dollars, or, you know, it was successful because it was packed. But I think what's more important, I mean, it's certainly everyone's entitled to make a living, and this is hard work. But I think that the success of an event is relative to the level of enjoyment your customers had. So even when you're a young promoter and you're starting out and you had a party that wasn't as well attended as you like, but everybody had a great time, your parties are going to grow.
Yeah. That's how it works. That's how it works.
That's how it works.
Now, was I correct that this is your 24th Dinah?
Yeah, isn't that scary?
Well, how do you even focus on 24? Is your mind already on 25?
Well, when you consider, Ken, that I've been producing this for as many years as probably my average age of attendee, I don't like to talk about it all that often.
Well, you have to once a year on my show.
Exactly. I say things like, Ken, I've been doing this for 24 years. So then I kind of muffle it so that no one can really... Yeah, my average customer is probably about 29. So
I love it.
But
are you able... I mean, obviously it's coming up, and so you're pretty focused on it. But I would imagine there's part of you that's like, oh, gosh, next year is 25.
Yeah, no, it's a milestone, and it really is true that your 25th anniversary, I mean, the average age of my customers is closer to that. But what I think really will set us apart always and will continue to grow as we do, last year was my biggest year, and this year is exponentially larger than last year.
Wow.
Because it's crazy. We are committed to being a team. Everybody listens. I have an inner circle of four other people that work with me. Brianna's one of them, Leilani, Mona, and Chris. And we meet every Monday on Skype. And they're all different ages, and everyone's heard, and everyone's input is valued. And it will always ensure that the event has a very cutting-edge, state-of-the-art element to it. And so it's relevant always because we're constantly ensuring that it's relevant.
Great. Oh, I love it. Let's talk about this year's – actually, before we talk about this year's event, I want to talk a little bit about Palm Springs itself. You have just an amazing piece in the Huffington Post that we'll link to all about Palm Springs. And in that piece, this is what you wrote. Quote, over the years, Palm Springs, once a stuffy Republican town, has warmly embraced the event, our customers, and our lifestyles. Palm Springs has come to epitomize the definition of living out loud. The city boasts a very large LGBT population. Estimates are that nearly half of the residents identify as gay, not to mention gay and gay-friendly businesses, restaurants, hotels, nightclubs, retailers, providing a unique sense of community. I can't help but think the Dinah is partly responsible for this positive change. Over the years, you've really seen a change there in Palm Springs.
Oh, God, yeah. When I first started producing the Dinah, it was very Republican. I couldn't get hotel contracts 6 months out. They wouldn't give me I don't know if this is true or not, but to hold out to offer a contract until 6 months before the event is really looking for what else comes along that might be a better piece of business.
Right.
You know, you're kind of the last thought, and it has changed, it's done a 360. The town loves the event. They're proud of the event. They openly promote the event. The city council, the tourism bureau, they're so gay friendly. It's really, you know, you could lend the name of your show to Palm Springs. This town is so gay.
Love it. Which
it's
begs
so
the
cool.
question, if I started putting Mariah Hansen for Palm Springs mayor bumper stickers on my car, would that be accurate?
I don't think so.
Because what I heard just happened was that you were announcing your mayoral bid.
No, I'm not going to become mayor of Palm Springs anytime
soon. All right. All right.
Yes. So I'm going to leave that to the most amazing mayor.
All right.
He's doing a pretty incredible job.
That's a good thing. So we are closer than ever, than we've ever done one of these interviews, to the Dinah. You're calm because you have an incredible team and because apparently you're able to be calm, which I would not. April 2nd through 6th, so much happening with the Dinah. Where do we even start? We start with Tegan and Sarah. That's pretty exciting.
How cool was that? Now, and that was not easy. And this was actually my most nerve-wracking year early on because I put all my eggs in that basket. When you put an offer out, you're bound by it. And so if you put another offer out and they both say yes, you're legally bound, even though you don't have a contract to pay for both acts. And so you can't put out numerous offers at the same time. And Tegan and Sarah kept on saying, we can't commit. We can't commit. This went on for 3 months. I was past my deadline of when I announced, and I was facing Christmas holiday or the holiday season where all the agencies are closed, and I was looking at coming into January with no headliner. I was flipped out. So if you actually did this interview when you normally do,
darn it,
I would have been a wreck, Ken. But it worked out. They finally said yes. I do believe that we may be the first large-scale lesbian event that they've played.
Yeah.
And I'm really proud of the fact that they chose us. They're so on fire right now, and it's relevant for them, and it's relevant for us because we're very well known for getting those artists right at the verge of greatness. And although Tegan and Sarah arguably have been around for a long time and are certainly resting on their own laurels, they just broke out into mainstream. And because they've been this incredible indie band for, I think, 9 years?
Oh, yeah. Oh, they've been, a long time.
Yeah, actually longer, huh? They're in their 30s now. So it's really an honor for me that they recognize the stature of my event. And I'm just thrilled to have them.
Love it.
It's selling like hotcakes.
Oh, I would imagine. I would imagine. There is so much comedy happening with folks that we've just spoken to. So Fortune Feimster, who I'm actually going to see tonight, and she was on the show.
She just got her own show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, she was just on our show 2 weeks ago. And Erin Foley, who I just saw a couple weeks ago, and she was on the show. Why comedy? What place does comedy have at the Dinah?
Well, that's a really good question, Ken. What's important for me is that the event always remain relevant to the broader scope of our community. So I don't want to just be that core crazy party element, because even though that's what we are at our core, and if it's not broken, don't fix it. But we're also dealing with, after 24 years of a clientele that's aging. There's 21-year-olds that can't wait to come to the Dinah, and there's 50-year-olds that have done the Dinah. They don't want to do the Dinah anymore, but yet it's so inspiring to be in that element at least for a few hours at some point during the weekend, because it's just lesbian pride,
right.
And so we offer ancillary events that we feel speak to a broader spectrum of our community. We're doing a film festival. We're doing the comedy show. We're doing celebrity poker, things that may not necessarily speak to that core element of what the Dinah is, but yet are reflective of the fact that we're all growing through the many stages of our lives together. And so we want to remain relevant to the greater amount of our customers as we can.
They are hilarious. That's going to be...
They're so good.
That's
going to
be
Gina
great.
Oh, and Gina Yashir, you forgot to say her. She's amazing.
I haven't even had her on the show yet.
Oh, you need to get her. She's actually British, and she's so funny. She was on Last Comic Standing. She's wonderful.
All right. I'm looking into that.
We have a really good comedy show.
Now, several...
last time we're ever going to have Fortune, because she's about to take off.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah. That show, well, it's a Tina Fey sitcom. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Now, several specific questions. Number one, how do I get to be a cabana girl? Is that possible?
Ken, I'll tell you how you become a cabana girl. You show up at the event.
I don't know what you mean. I am so there emotionally.
I'm going to wrap you a little toga wrap, a little loincloth.
Let me pull back the curtain for our listeners. My hope was, this is Mariah's fifth appearance on our show. This is a topic of conversation, getting me out to the Dinah every time we talk about it. My hope was to make it to minute like 6 or 7 on the air before it came up. But what you all didn't hear was that in the 30 seconds that I spoke to Mariah before we pressed record, she grilled me with, are you coming? So we didn't make it very far this year.
We didn't. We didn't even get live with that one.
I know. Let me tell
but
you
we
this.
We want you to come.
And
man. We want all your listeners to encourage you to show up at the Dinah, because we feel like you're Dinah family.
I love you guys. Let me tell you this, and this is small comfort, and I'm still not going, but this was the closest that I ever got to going.
Wow.
So this year, it was actually, we were right on the cusp, because our great friend, Dr. Frankie Bashan, and I made a bargain, and we worked it out with Brianna Stockton, and I don't know how much of this
I don't know any.
Well, let's just pretend that you endorsed it. We had this whole idea, Dr. Frankie and I were going to have a booth, there was going to be relationship advice, and I was going to be recording, and we came really close to it, and logistics just prevented us from pulling it off this year. But Dr. Frankie and I signed a contract in blood just this morning and said, we're definitely doing this together next year.
Oh, I love it. And you know what? You would do so well.
So for your 25th, the Dinah, I will be there next year.
I love it. You promise, Ken.
Without question, I will be there, without question. So there's that. Now, anytime you get together, even a small number of gay folks, much less thousands and thousands of lesbians, I would argue that it is by definition a political statement, especially now in you know, Palm Springs, not that far from Arizona, where there's a lot of drama going on. How much does the politics of it all play into your organizing of the event?
That's another great question. It does come into play, but very subtly, because we are a party and we're a celebration.
Yeah.
And so I need to be really careful about how I present things.
Absolutely.
Of a political nature. And so we do it in ways that make sense for the event, because I do think that especially with the younger generation, that it seems easier than it's ever been. And yet, it's really, we have so much to go. We have so much to do. The work is not done yet. And we're getting closer and closer. And it'll be like a domino effect, you know. It's just going to get faster and faster. But yet, we're still not there. And so how do you make politics relevant at a crazy Bacchanalian event?
Right.
And the way that we do it is in subtle ways. Like, we had the No Hate guys there, and we took photographs of everybody that wanted one because it was a political statement. They would go home and put that on their Facebook page, and yet they were having fun doing it. And this year, our political statement, and last year's as well, is with HRC, where we're doing a celebrity poker tournament. And so you're playing poker. All the 100% of the proceeds are going towards HRC. But you're having fun. It's not spoon-fed politics at that event, because it wouldn't mix. And, in fact, it would probably have a negative impact on the issue that you were trying to help people understand.
I think that's remarkably upfront and commendable that you put it out there like that, because I would imagine that you get all sorts of nonprofits hitting you up saying, hey, can we get in on this?
We do have a lot, but I try to focus on one or two.
Yeah.
Because I would rather make a larger impact with as best I can with one, rather than dilute it, because the event just doesn't speak to it entirely.
Okay.
And so.
Yeah. No, I think that makes sense. Now, not to grill you on current events, but I kind of will. You're an event planner, and you have a state really right next door to Palm Springs putting out there the idea that vendors could refuse services to gay folks. How do you wrap your mind around that?
Well, I mean, I'll tell you, it's heinous, and we all know that it's heinous. And what will happen, though, because we're a very savvy community, is that the way that we should respond to things like that are through our dollars.
Yeah.
And I mean, I wouldn't be visiting Arizona if I were a gay person. I don't think any gay person should. I think that we should be showing that's where they're going to get it.
And it will make a difference.
It'll make a difference. But you know, they're really, it's always shocking when things like this happen now, because it feels like such a setback when we're moving forward. And then this happens, and it's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah, so we're not ordering our services from Arizona there at the diner.
And I say that, I mean, it's a delicate topic, because at the same time, if we boycott Arizona, there's gay businesses there. It's really tricky.
Yeah. All right, so with the diner coming up on April 2nd, how are we doing? I would imagine quite a few tickets sold.
It's going to be a huge year.
What does that mean? Because for me, that means I would like to get 20 people to my event, but I think you use different criteria.
we have an incredible lineup this year, and people have really responded to it, and we kept on throwing it out there. So I think when people thought we were done, we kept on surprising people. Tegan and Sarah alone would have been all I needed to do to have a successful diner, but I have a commitment to the widespread belief that we are the largest lesbian event in the world, and as such, we need to produce the event at that stature. And so, for me, I don't skimp on things like entertainment or any aspect of the event, because we're setting a standard that I'm really proud of, And I think our community deserves it. And so we really just do 150%. And, you know, we even just announcing Kate Menig and Lisa Haley, no one was expecting that. And she's so beloved, Kate especially. I mean, they both are, but Lisa is in a band, so people see her a little bit more often.
Right.
But the excitement around that was just as big as Tegan and Sarah. It was kind of cool. And then we have Eve, and it's just a really diverse, really incredible lineup this year, and we've sold a lot of tickets as a result.
And my buddies with a Hunter Valentine, who I adore.
I know, and I'll tell you something. This will be the last time people will see that band in this intimate of a setting, and it's not even all that intimate of a setting, but that band's about to take off. I can't say why I know that, but I
Look
do know
at
it.
You.
I you
just
do,
so
right?
you know, just so you know, I generally think that you know things that the rest of us don't. Obviously, there's something going on with Hunter Valentine that you know, but just my baseline is that I assume that Mariah Hansen knows things that the rest of us don't.
I just really love the way you think.
I love it. Well, I ask you this question. I ask you this every year, but it's my favorite question to ask you because I think it's really important. You have someone, it doesn't even matter what age they are, but they're thinking, gosh, I would love to go to the Dinah for the first time, but I feel like I would be a little bit overwhelmed by it. Walk me through the steps of going to the Dinah for the first time and making the most of my experience.
Well, I think the first thing for a first-time Dinah goer is to drink lots of water.
Okay.
And to pace oneself because it is such an exciting arena to walk into. It's just mayhem. It's energy. It's excitement. There's women from all over the world, and they're all there enjoying, living out loud, celebrating their lives. And it's overwhelming because you just don't see this every day. There's
right.
nothing really like the Dinah. And so the first advice I would give is to pace yourself. Don't go crazy the first night because there's four more days of nonstop fun, and you don't really want to miss anything.
Yeah.
So that would be my first advice. And my second is that it's actually a really friendly environment. And so for people who are going, especially a lot of people go on their own, they go single, and they ask me, is this, can I be comfortable arriving solo? And the answer is yes, absolutely, because people are so friendly. It's just this joyous atmosphere. And as long as you're bringing an attitude of, I want to meet people and I'm open to meeting and being forward about saying hello, you're going to have a blast.
Totally. And not that this is the sole selling point, because it shouldn't be, mm-hmm. but my God, Mariah, I love reading online. I just feel like thousands of folks who met their eventual partner at the Dinah.
I know. Yeah. That's pretty incredible, huh? You can find your soulmate there.
No one, I confirm this too, no one has ever broken up at the Dinah, but they have found their soulmates there.
I don't know if that's true.
Go with it, Mariah. I know what I'm doing.
I can't, Ken.
I know what I'm doing, so this is very exciting.
No one's ever broken up there, and your soulmate is waiting at the Dinah.
Wow. They're there right now. They're camped out. That's
they're
very exciting.
They're waiting for you.
Now, I have to ask you, as we talk increasingly about trans issues, how trans-friendly is the Dinah?
Very, very. I was honored to be on the board of Equality California for, I think, 5 or 6 years. And I was on the board with Shannon Minter, who is a very well-known transgender. And I just learned firsthand not only how just authentic and honest that experience is, that some people were born the wrong sex, and it's just as simple as that. But I was also touched by what courage it takes to live out loud like that, because the world has not always, just like for the LGBT community, I think for the transgender community especially, the world has not always been as kind as it should be and will be. And the courage that these men and women have to be their true authentic selves is, it touches my heart. And Shannon really was my first really close connection to the just the courage of just being who you are. And he lives such an amazing life, and he changes so many lives. He's the most generous person. So it's a very, very trans-friendly environment.
And the other piece that I want to put out there, we talk so much about body image on this show. I already know the answer, but I love hearing you say it. How embracing is the Dyna of just the range of body images out there?
Well, it's very, because the fact of the matter is that one man's pleasure is another man's pain. Everybody's beautiful. And, you know, I just heard something so amazing the other day. How did it go? I got to remember it. Be weird. Live out loud. Be your strange self. You never know who will love the person you've been hiding.
Oh, love it. Love it. All right.
Awesome.
Yeah,
I didn't quite give it the justice it deserves, but you know, we're very body positive. We're very people positive, Ken.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people are beautiful, and, you know, large or small, black, white, whatever the uniqueness that you bring, it's yours and it's beautiful, and this world needs to, all of us, we need to remind ourselves every day that that's what's worth embracing in life.
You know, I have to tell you and be very honest with you, one of the reasons that I hate talking to you is because even as I feel secure in my decision that I'm not going to the Dyna this year, I always know, and then I'm going to talk to her and I'm going to feel like, oh crap, I need to get to the Dyna.
You need to get to the Dyna.
I know. It's 2015.
Your soulmate's waiting there for you.
2015.
And you'll never break up.
Club Skirts presents the Dyna in 2015 with Ken. That's the subtitle.
I love it.
It's going to happen.
That's going to be the title.
I love it. All right. Well, folks, you need to stroll on over to thedyna.com April 2nd through 6th. It's right this year. It's just in a little bit. It's in Palm Springs, California. I would assume they would have to work hard to find some hotel accommodations, right?
We have very few rooms left.
Okay.
There are probably about 15 at the Saguaro, and they just opened up. Some people canceled in March 1st. And then we have probably about 20 rooms at the Courtyard Marriott. That's pretty much it.
All right.
You know, you can always find a hotel. You're just going to pay a hefty price at this point. So.
Gotcha. And just to be clear with our listeners, I announced that I'm going to next year's Dyna. So if the only reason you're going is to see me, you got to wait till next year, but you should still go. And you got to look up Brianna Stockton because she said that she's going to do some sort of boot camp for me, and that frightens me more than I can tell you.
Okay. Yeah, Ken, it should.
Have you done it? I'm scared to work out with her.
Yeah, no, you should be.
Okay. Yes. I also learned by reading online that she eats something like 82 meals a day. It's a little scary.
She's a raw food expert, and she actually makes raw food taste amazing.
All right, we'll
see. Like you're like kind of, I'm really eating zucchini. It tastes like, she's brilliant. She's a brilliant chef.
A reason to go to the Dyna in itself.
Yeah. Well, she's also drop-dead gorgeous.
And then there's that.
Yeah, exactly.
Folks, stroll on over to thedyna.com. I would love to come up with something original to end this with, but I will tell you what I tell you really every year. What you are doing is providing a pure, unadulterated experience for folks, something they can look back on, something that they can share with others. I know there's been a voyage of self-discovery for just countless folks who have gone to the Dyna. It's not just about meeting other people and building that community, though that in itself is invaluable. But I also have read testimonials online of folks who go and learned more about themselves. And you, Mariah Hansen, and of course your staff, are providing the place for that to happen. And there's just nothing bigger out there.
Thanks, Ken.
So 2015, I will be there. But for 2014, have the most amazing Dyna.
Thank you. And always really incredible to talk to you. And I'm excited that you're coming next year.
Where do you go with your broken heart and soul? And what do you do with the left over you? And how do you know when to let go? Where does the good go? Where does the good go? Look me in the eye and tell me you don't find me attractive. Look me in the heart and tell me you won't go. Look me in the eye and promise.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, you would never know it because you're listening to the whole episode, and so you just heard one segment, and then there was a little music, and now you're hearing my voice again, and so you're thinking it was all recorded together, but it actually wasn't. I've been putting off recording this segment for the past couple days, and it was total avoidance mode, and I will tell you why. We'll get to that in a couple seconds, but first, a little bit of business. Thank you so much for checking out our 250th episode. The feedback that we have received has been incredible. People have been sending emails to KenAtTheShowIsSoGay.com, and the stories with Suzanne Westenhofer were kind of awe-inspiring, and people thought I made it up. I did not make that up. You can go to the New York Times, just Google Suzanne Westenhofer and Pascack Hills High School, and you will see that I did not make that up. Suzanne Westenhofer, in 1993, when I was a junior in high school, Suzanne Westenhofer came to our health class. I was not in the class. I opted out. I didn't want to have anything to do with it for so many reasons, but she came to our health class, and my high school bully, John Conoratis, who Suzanne and I are still trying to find, we're working on it. So if you're listening and you know John Conoratis from Montvale, New Jersey, write me an email. KenAtTheShowIsSoGay.com. I want to find him. I want to get him on the show. We have some things to talk about, so just putting out that. But yes, she came to my high school bully, John Conoratis, who you're going to help me find. He actually said there at the New York Times when she got choked up and said, what would you do if your brother were gay? And John Conoratis, my bully, said, shoot him. Right there in the New York Times. So that was an incredible segment. And of course, Eliza Byard from GLSEN, and I've been trying to get her on the show for years, and so that was great. So keep on listening. That's kind of fun. You can share that link with others. And if you don't know, it's kind of a fun little thing to do. If you have a road trip coming up, or you are just sitting on the bike at the gym, or whatever it is you do and you need to take up some ear space, you can go to thisshowisogay.com. You can download every single one of our 250 episodes. I do not recommend that you download the first couple. They're not very good. They're kind of the lost episodes, but they're still up on the website. But gosh, that I went back and was listening to some of them just with Becca, and when Becca and I used to do this together, and it's just incredible. So you can go there, theshowisogay.com, download everything. So that's that. By the way, me talking right now, total avoidance. I'm avoiding getting to the real topics at hand, but I should probably get to them right now. So what's going on this week? We got Arizona, right? So let's frame this. You have a state that put a bill out there, which people voted for, Arizona state senators, Arizona state representatives, it went through, and the bill would effectively allow businesses and individuals to refuse service to LGBT folks on religious grounds, right? So then, I think there was a brief period of awe and shock, because it went through pretty quick. And now here we are now, and this might change by the time you guys listen to the show, and I hope that it has. Governor Jan Brewer, and you know Jan Brewer, she's the one who, she shook her finger at President Obama there on the tarmac. Remember that? That's all I know about her, is that she does that. She has until Saturday to veto it. Now, everybody is saying veto it, including some of the people who voted for it. The Republican congressional delegation there in Arizona, John McCain, saying you should veto it. Mitt Romney came out of his bunker. He said you should veto it. And it sounds like Governor Brewer is going to veto it on on economic reasons, which whatever. I don't really care why she vetoes it as long as she vetoes it. And then, so you got that, right? So we're setting the stage. Then you have similar bills that are being proposed in Missouri, and a similar bill that's being proposed in Georgia, and a similar bill that was proposed here in Ohio. Now, I will give you the quick update. Here in Ohio, the lead sponsors of the Ohio bill that critics say mirrors this same legislation in Arizona, they have said this week on Wednesday that they are withdrawing the legislation. Co-sponsors Representative Bill Patman, who's a Democrat from Cleveland, here in Cleveland, Representative Bill Patman, Democrat, and Representative Tim Derrickson, a Republican from Oxford, they agreed to remove House Bill 376 from consideration after increased pressure from civil and gay rights groups and concerns about controversy in Arizona. Now, Patman, again, a Democrat here in Cleveland, this is what he said, quote, "We thought it would be a good idea to protect people who wanted to wear their yarmulke to work or put their Bible on their desk and not be punished in any form for that." What the heck are you talking about, dude? First of all, and I know I'm being very partisan, what are you doing, Democrat proposing legislation like this. That doesn't make any sense. And I don't want to say this is what we expect from Republicans, and it's not. I don't expect this from anybody. But when I read legislation like this, I do assume it comes from Republicans. So I have an issue there, and I am a Democrat. And, you know, if you don't want to listen to a show with a Democrat, you can listen to other shows. But I want you to keep listening to this one and respond, and we'll chat, and so we do it respectfully here. So there's that. So that has gone down now in Ohio. They've shelved the bill, and indefinitely it won't happen. But that they even proposed it, there was a little bit of gasping here in Ohio. But Missouri and Georgia and maybe some other places, this could go through. So as my focus was on Arizona, and I should put this out there, I actually talked about this a little bit in class last night. I'm teaching a course this semester called Ethical Leadership with my master's students, and I mentioned something about Arizona, and a student raised her hand. I got about 5 minutes into the conversation. And a student raised her hand and said, what are you talking about? So we got to remind ourselves. We have to do this all the time. We have to remind ourselves that there are people out there who are extraordinarily with it and on the ball who don't even know that these things are happening. I think sometimes, particularly if you're quite attuned to LGBT media, we make a lot of assumptions that everybody else is on the same page, and they might not be. So you can't just go around saying, I can't believe what's happening in Arizona, because they could be talking about the heat wave. I don't know if there is a heat wave. By the way, if there is, kind of want to go to Arizona, the snow thing, killing me. Anyway, so we have to take the time to explain it to people. I find that that is the case each and every time. Each and every time I talk about the ban on gay men giving blood, that someone in the audience says, what are you talking about? So as much as we can get tired sometimes, and I am on that page of doing LGBT 101, we have to do it because not everybody is up on the news and they have other priorities. So don't go around talking about Arizona. Explain it to people. Say, and if they say, yeah, I know, that's great. Then you can move on to another topic or deepen your conversation about Arizona. So a couple days ago, I was watching, if you haven't seen it, you must. I was watching Anderson Cooper. I love him. I love him. I know it's cliche, but I love him. He had Arizona State Senator Al Melvin on his show. And they have this exchange, and you can watch it on YouTube, and the Huffington Post has it. But I started watching it, and I just got crazy overwhelmed. Because Anderson Cooper was trying to make a dent in Senator Melvin's arguments, and he wasn't making any headway. And these were pretty basic arguments. And Senator Melvin really was just putting out there all the cliches that we've heard a million times of, listen, marriage is being attacked all over the country and values are being attacked. And you're thinking, really? That's still what we're doing? That's what we're saying? So I'm watching this and watching. It's about 10 minutes long, and I'm getting more and more overwhelmed. And then I go to Facebook, as I naturally would. I think that's actually where I picked up the clip to begin with. And everybody's posting on Facebook. And, you know, I'm friends with the folks that run the Balearico Project and certainly the folks that run the Huffington Post Gay Voices section. And they've all been on the show before. And people are posting things from Queerty and posting and posting and posting. And I'm getting more and more agitated. And I just had no outlet for any of this. And I kind of started freaking out a bit. Like, well, what am I supposed to do? We're not just talking about gay marriage, which, again, I hope gay marriage passes everywhere. That's fine. We're talking about me not being me and you not being able to go into a store and not have the concern that you might not be served for reasons that apparently can be defended. So I don't know what to do with all of that. That's discrimination on such a basic level. You know, I have issues with, obviously, the lack of marriage equality, and I have insane issues with the blood donation piece, which is the blood ban is a discrimination on a cellular level. But I've never, for that one, I just don't give blood, you know? I don't live my life going into a store and questioning whether or not I'm going to get served, right? Now that, my friends, is part of my privilege. And we always have to talk about privilege. I am a white, relatively affluent male with quite an education background. I'm extraordinarily privileged. The opportunities that I've had have been tremendous. And so, because of that privilege, maybe it's even a little bit more jarring to me that I could walk into a store in Arizona, which I go to Arizona. I had a conference there last year in Phoenix. The possibility that I could go to Arizona and not be served, it's like, wait, this isn't the 1950s. And I know they're sharing, everybody on Facebook sharing the picture of black folks not being served at a counter, lunch counter in 1950s. And I have some issues with that comparison. And because, again, I can pass. that's another part of my privilege. Is there homophobia out there? Is there discrimination? Obviously, talk about it all the time on the show. But I can pass. That the same is not true for other racial groups who are then exposed to other types of discrimination. So I actually sat down and I wrote a piece for the Huffington Post, and you guys can go check it out. It's I'm really not joking. It's called Help, I Feel Overwhelmed by Arizona. Because help, folks, I feel really overwhelmed by everything going on in Arizona, and I don't know what to do with it. And so for me, what it boiled down to, and you can go read it on your own. I'm not going to read my piece to you. I hope you do check it out, because it's definitely what's going on in my head. For me, it's this conflict between our social media 24-hour news-driven culture, where we access these tales of discrimination, combined with these really palpable sentiments that we should be doing something, but nobody actually says what. And so there are a couple things I articulate that I want in the article. And again, you can check it out, and I write it better than I'm saying it right now. I want all the gay groups to get together and have joint communications, which isn't really happening. I want the White House to have a response, which they're not. But this is the big piece. I want the Balearico Project, the Advocate.com, Queerty, all the other LGBT news sharing sites, including the Gay Voices section of the Huffington Post, where this piece was published, to start taking more of a stand. And by that, I mean directing people's energy. I've been thinking a lot about the difference between a news site, or let's even make it more basic, between a newspaper and these sites like the Huffington Post Gay Voices section, where they can measure their readership and they can see the comments, which a newspaper, you can't really see the comments. They see people getting riled up. And of course, the more they get people riled up with articles, the more sensational some of these stories, which we're not creating Arizona, Arizona's creating Arizona, but the more sensational some of these stories, the more people are likely to click on other stories. And I would argue that the Balearico Project and the Huffington Post Gay Voices section and the Advocate.com, which is resembling more and more the Huffington Post Gay Voices section, we could talk about that later, that they have a duty to take the next step, knowing that they're riling people up, and provide some contact information for the people in the article. Tell us how to contact Senator Al Melvin. You're not just a static newspaper. That's not the age that we're in. And let's just use the Huffington Post for a second. These are not dispassionate, objective journalists. That's not even why we're going to the Huffington Post Gay Voices section. So folks who work over there, let's create some sidebars and tell folks, if this riles you up, do this. Here are some things you could do. Maybe not be so directive and say this is what you should do, but give folks some options. Where we're at now, it's just person after person after person sharing stories, riling us up, and there's no one directing our energy. And I think that we need to start directing that energy if we're going to be successful. So that's my long rant about that. There is good news out there. It's not like there's not good news out there. In Texas, it's just happened. It's just happened a few days ago. The U.S. District Judge Orlando Garcia, he ruled this past week on Wednesday that Texas's ban on same-sex marriage, it's unconstitutional in Texas. He issued a preliminary injunction on the state's ban, citing Supreme Court precedent. However, Garcia issued a stay on his order, meaning the ban will remain in effect pending appeal, because you know it's going to appeal. He wrote in the order, quote, "Today's court decision is not made in defiance of the great people of Texas or the Texas legislature, but in compliance with the U.S. Constitution and Supreme Court precedent. Without a rational relation to a legitimate governmental purpose, state-imposed inequality can find no refuge in our U.S. Constitution." Holy cow, am I saying that again. Without a rational relation to a legitimate governmental purpose, state-imposed inequality can find no refuge in our U.S. Constitution. So what Texas is going to have to do, you ready? What Texas is going to have to do in their appeal, which you know they will, is argue that there is a governmental purpose, not a religious purpose, not a personal purpose, but a governmental purpose to not allowing people of the same sex to marry. And they'll do it. They'll try to make that argument, and it will be insulting, and I'll feel overwhelmed again, but that's what they're going to have to do. So, hello, Texas, of all places, a ban on same-sex marriage unconstitutional. So there's that. Other good news. In California, a coalition of organizations seeking to repeal a new transgender students' rights law in California, they failed to gather enough signatures to place the measure before voters in November, according to the Secretary of State's office. The Privacy for All Students Coalition fell roughly 17,000 signatures short of the over 500,000 signatures needed to force a public vote, which, by the way, means that they got close to 500,000. So that's kind of troubling. The Human Rights Campaign President Chad Griffin said in a statement, quote, "The forces of discrimination tried to go after California's LGBT young people, and it's a sign of our progress that they fell short of their goal." And I agree, and I'm happy that it's not going to be on the ballot. And again, we don't put things like this up for public vote. Why have we not learned that? But they did get like 490,000 signatures. And so I'm happy that they fell short, but that's concerning. So there's that. Uganda. And you know Uganda has a special place in my heart. I've been quite a few times and I adore Uganda in many ways, but Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni signed into law last week a bill that will impose strict penalties on homosexuality, including a life sentence. A life sentence for anyone found guilty of a same-sex relationship. Museveni said last week that scientists have failed to produce evidence contradicting the idea that homosexuality is a lifestyle choice. Secretary of State John Kerry here in the U.S., he called the development, quote, "a tragic day for Uganda and for all who care about the cause of human rights." He then said that the U.S. would reconsider its relationship to Uganda in light of the law. And I get it. I get that that's a really effective strategy, but it really frightens me because the folks that I have come into contact with in Uganda will be so disproportionately affected by aid not coming through, and they don't support this law. When I was in Uganda, I mean, when I was just there last Thanksgiving, or Thanksgiving 2013, and broached the topic of the Kill the Gays legislation as it was known then, folks said, yeah, we know about it, but that's not our priority right now. Look at all the people in Uganda who don't have running water, who don't have electricity, who the infrastructure there just rips lives apart. The roads are insane in Uganda. And so, yes, maybe the government of Uganda might reconsider the direction they're going by the U.S. pulling their aid, but the U.S. pulling their aid to Uganda, it's hard for me not to go straight to the folks who will be affected by that. And it's not going to be the president, Yoweri Museveni. So I get it. That's an effective strategy. Kind of makes me sick. So there's that. A federal judge ruled last week that same-sex couples in Cook County, Illinois, should immediately be allowed to marry, which expedited a marriage equality law that was not slated to take effect until June. Judge Sharon Johnson Coleman wrote in her opinion, quote, "There is no reason to delay further when committed gay and lesbian couples have already suffered from the denial of their fundamental right to marry." So that's exciting in Maryland. So much going on. A Maryland bill that would ban discrimination based on gender identity was passed out of a Senate committee on Thursday and is set to be considered by the full chamber. The bill, which was introduced by Democratic State Senator Rich Mataleno, is expected to pass the Senate. Mataleno said, quote, "The vote reflects on the incredible hard work that people have done to educate members of the committee about the need for this bill." By the way, I got to give credit where credit's due, because folks are like, where do you pull all these stories from? This week, a lot came out of my own head because it was just me venting. But I pull so much from the Gay Politics Report, which is sponsored by the Victory Fund and largely put together by Dennis Dyson, who works over there at the Victory Fund. And so this week I'm pulling from there even more than I usually do. And I will also tell you one of the reasons for that, one of the reasons why this is a great compendium, and it's not like it's not amazing on its own, but one of the reasons it's amazing is because of the absence of some other sites. TheAdvocate.com is a train wreck at this point, and I enjoy The Advocate. I think that it's an incredible magazine, and what they've done is incredible. So yay for Advocate. Advocate.com and Out.com are freaking nightmares. The firewalls that they have up with ads are so disconcerting and so blocking of you accessing content. I'm just in awe that they're continuing with this. I will tell you, here's my little secret to bypassing them. Because if you want to read a story on advocate.com or out.com, as soon as you click on the story, an ad just comes up like 2 seconds and it really blocks it out. to an obnoxious degree. An obnoxious degree. It's not like a static ad that you can just cross out of. You actually have to watch the ad if you want to access the content. And some of the articles start with urgent. Okay, well, how urgent is this? I can't access your article. But here's the trick. Go to advocate.com or out.com. Actually, I only know this for advocate.com. Maybe it works on out.com. If there's a story you want to read, if it says urgent and you want to urgently access it, click the print button. Click on the story, and before the ad comes up, you have about a second and a half. You can do it. Click the print button, and it goes immediately to a screen where it displays all the text, maybe not all the pretty pictures that you could get if you were to watch it, or if you were to access the content after the ad, but you can at least access the content much more quickly. It's obnoxious. I don't know what's going on at advocate.com. It's trying to be like the Huffington Post, and we've talked about that on the show before, but it is no longer really my news source, so that's kind of depressing. Hey, guess what? We have an amazing show next week as well. So what I'm actually going to try to do is move away from two guests a show. It's actually kind of exhausting for me to set up two guests every single week. Even though venting like this is kind of exhausting for me too, recording two interviews is just a lot of scheduling and it's a bit much for me. So as you heard today with today's show, we're going to try to do one guest a little bit more extended. And so I actually already recorded my interview for next week with Sean Strube, who wrote an incredible book. He founded the groundbreaking magazine Pause. So he's on the show. We recorded the most amazing chat. It's a little bit long. It's still under our normal show length of 59 minutes, but it's going to be probably one guest a week. And that also makes room for me starting to do the news segment with hopefully a new co-host who I'm going to have dinner with in a few minutes, and I'm going to try to sell her on it. So I hope that next week I have like just the most incredible announcement for you. Here's introducing my new co-host, but we'll see. And then, by the way, if I never bring this up again, you know it didn't go well. It didn't go well at all. Sean Strube on next week's show. You guys know what to do. Get in touch with me. I love your emails. I adore them. Send them. Ken@theshowisogay.com. If you've sent one before, you know I answer. You know it. And we're always looking for new guests, so send those on over too. Ken@theshowisogay.com. Hey, folks, get out there. Take your energy and do something with it. I can't tell you what to do. You gotta use your voice the way you know how to do it to make a difference. You cannot sit in front of your computer and just stew. It's not healthy. You tend to feel overwhelmed, and then you gotta go to the Huffington Post and write a story called Help, I Feel Overwhelmed. I can't believe I actually wrote that. But yes, that's the name of it. Help, I Feel Overwhelmed by Arizona. So go make a difference. You know how to do it. Use your strengths. I taught that in class last week. That's the key to authentic leadership, is to use your strengths. Use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. And while you are out there, folks, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?